Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by NBA champ Kendrick Perkins and our senior writer, the Hall of Famer, Ms. Jackie McMullen. Welcome, friends. Coming up, we're going to talk about Kyrie Irving. He says the Nets look, quote, very average after the loss to the Pistons last night. What is the biggest reason for their three-game losing streak? We will get into that. But first, there are a lot of great rivalries in basketball, but I would put what went on between the Heat and the Knicks in the late 90s up against any of them. The bad blood started when Pat Riley left New York to go run things in Miami, a move that led to tampering charges and a $1 million Heat payout. And then all of that escalated as the teams met in playoffs four consecutive years. We got fights, we got trash talk, we got tabloid exploits, we got game-winning buzzer beaters, and yes, more fights. PJ Brown flipping Charlie Ward over his head. Yeah, you gotta remember that. That turned into a thing there, right? And then, of course, the following year, the Jeff Van Gundy special. Personally, I don't think Alonzo Mourning's leg ever stood a chance, Jeff. You had that one. Yeah, really. Of course, these days, a Knicks-Heat game doesn't have quite the same kind of fire. The two organizations have followed such different paths the past couple decades. You can't even really call it a rivalry anymore. And yet, there was definitely a little crackle in the air when the teams met last night, the stakes on both sides feeling just a little higher than they did even just a few days ago. Over on the New York bench, it was Derrick Rose's first game since being traded back to the Knicks, a move that not only reunited him with the franchise, but Tom Thibodeau, who has had Rose on, yep, every single NBA team he has ever coached. And last night, Rose paid that faith off immediately. He dropped 10 points and 3 assists in just the first half, looked comfortable in the Knicks' second unit alongside fan favorite Emmanuel Quickley. Meanwhile, on the other side of the court, the Heat saw this as a key opportunity to continue their climb back into playoff contention. It has been an extremely rocky start to the season for the last year's Eastern Conference champions, who have struggled to put a full roster on the floor, and last night were still missing Goran Dragic and Avery Bradley. Miami has used 16 different lineups in 24 games. It is hard to build much continuity that way, and they still look shaky at times against New York as both teams went on lopsided runs. And boy, were the on-off numbers with Jimmy Butler something to see. With Butler on the court, the Heat outscored the Knicks by 25 points. With Butler off the court, New York outscored Miami by 23. Good thing for the Heat, then, that Butler was there for the closing stretch that first saw Miami come from behind and then turned into, of all things, an old-school duel marked by physical defense and high-pressure trips to the line. Here was Heat coach Eric Spoelstra describing it.
This was more of a throwback Miami Heat, New York Knicks game from the 90s, where there weren't a lot of open shots in the last 14, 16 minutes of the game. And, you know, it was just going, you're going to have to grind out a win, you know, and in many ways do it, you know, when you weren't scoring, you know. So free throws were like gold in this game, and the defensive stops, you know, down the stretch were inspiring.
Inspiring. Now, let's be clear. Things did not reach Alonzo Mourning, Patrick Ewing level physically out there last night. In fact, the closest thing to a flagrant foul turned out to be more of a spoof. Check out this tussle under the basket, bodies crashing to the floor. And Jimmy Butler stays down holding his head, except he can't help himself as he peeks out with a little smile to see if the cell job is working.
I mean, I've studied Mark Wahlberg and how he acts so incredibly well, and I've taken a few pointers.
First of all, if Jimmy was really injured, he's not peeking. If Jimmy's really injured, everybody knows he's trying to get up and trying to walk it off. So the fact that he was down there for so long, just being Jimmy, you know, I feel like that's one of those things where, like, one of the course of the game, it lightens the mood. You know, everybody gets a break, a mental break from being serious for like 30 seconds, and then we lock back in.
Look at that smile as he popped back up. Butler would not get the flagrant call, but he made one of his free throws to give Miami a two-point lead with 6 seconds to play. And while RJ Barrett actually had a pretty good chance to send this game to overtime, just could not put the ball in the hoop. Another Heat-Knicks game in the books, and no, it's not really a rivalry again yet, but sure is something fun. And in 2021, that's enough. Perk, three in a row now for Miami. Do you think they will rebound from this slow start?
Absolutely, Rachel. And the thing that the Miami Heat has is that they have culture. Okay, they have an identity, and their identity is that they're going to put their hard hats on every single night, hang their hats on the defensive end. They're going to get good ball and player movement. And long as they have their two all-stars and Jimmy Butler and Bam out of the Bayou, yes, out of the Bayou, you know I messes up his name, so I kept it this way. But long as you have those two all-stars on the floor, I think the Heat are in great hands. They have a great coach in Eric Spoelstra, and they're going to continue to fight. They have great leadership in the locker room and on the bench, and Udonis Haslem, who's the captain. I have no worries about the Miami Heat. I feel like they will be in the thick of things come postseason time.
So I would wish they'd rebound the ball a little better, though, Perk. I think you would agree. I think they're dead last in rebounds per game right now, and that is a measure of toughness. So maybe that'll straighten itself out. So many lost bodies, COVID protocols, all of these things, Rachel. And, you know, if you looked at last year in the bubble, the team you thought was going to have the hardest time coming back from that short break, it had to be this team.
Yeah.
Because of the heavy, heavy minutes that Bam played and that Jimmy played and Hero and Duncan to a certain extent. So if there was one team that you would point to that say, hey, they might struggle a bit, this was probably the team. And Bam is an immensely talented player. But let's be honest, the heartbeat of this team is Jimmy Butler. Mm-hmm. And he was missing at the start of the year. And now he's back. I'm sure he'd like to get a little more into rhythm. He's not shooting the ball quite the way we saw in the bubble. I hate to keep referring to the bubble, but what have you done for me lately? That's our league to some degree. So I do think they're going to come around, but I do think that for all the teams that started slow, including someone like the Mavericks, there might be a little bit of a price to pay here going forward because it's a shortened season, right?
Yeah. Right. Every game is 1 out of 72 instead of 1 out of 82. Now, there are the playing games, right? So it gives you a little more movement in the standings. If you ended up in that ninth spot, it doesn't just mean you're out. It is interesting, though. This is a team that feels, and I said this the other day, they feel like they can play from behind. They can play from behind within games. We saw them do it just last night. And in fact, they showed last year they can play from behind even in the playoffs or in a season because they were the lower seeded team and made their way through the bracket as the underdog going up all the way to the NBA Finals. So having the confidence to know you can do that, that will serve this team well. But of course, Eric Spoelstra will be the first one to tell you, you don't want to depend on that because after a while, it's exhausting to play from behind all the time, both in games, in series, and in a playoff bracket. You want to sometimes have the advantage. We will keep watching them. All right, I want to get to the Nets guys who lost to the Pistons last night. They were without KD. He won't be back until this weekend because of those COVID protocol issues. But they also gave up 122 points. Kyrie disappointed after the game. Take a listen.
We're seeing it day in and day out where guys, teams are coming in and punching us in the mouth early, and we're playing catch up. I don't think that we go out every single day of our lives and sacrifice the time in order to be average at anything. You know, I know you don't wake up. I know no one here on this call wakes up to be average at anything that they do. And we look very average, you know, and we have the talent that the eye test presents that we should be dominating. You know, we have the experience in terms of some of our guys that have been through certain things, circumstances to be able to battle through. And we're dealing with a lot of the reality that we're putting this together on the fly. Like, we are the team that the NBA put the most games on. We're the team that gets someone taken out during COVID, during the games. We're the team that has to deal with the refs. We're the team that is literally battling against so many odds that at this point, it's not even a reason to continue to comment on them. They are what they are. And as a Warrior that I am and that the energy that I have alongside my teammates, we just have to turn that corner. And we haven't done it yet, but we will. And I'm telling you, the league's going to be on notice when that happens.
Pretty candid there from Kyrie, Jackie, and also a little thing at the end. The league could be nervous when that happens. The Nets have dropped three straight. What do you think is the biggest reason for that, and how much of it is, hey, Kevin Durant's not there right now?
Rachel, I feel like a broken record, but I think everybody that's been talking about the Nets says the same thing. It goes back to the defense. Since they traded for James Harden, they have the worst defensive efficiency rating of any team in the league. These guys are supremely talented, but when you let your guard down and play sub 500 teams, to think you can just outscore them every game, that's not going to work. Do you realize they allowed the Detroit Pistons to shoot 70% in the game last night from the paint? You're not going to beat any team when you allow that. Do they miss Jared Allen? Yes, they do, but he's not coming back. So start shoring up your defense if you want to. If you really want to win a championship, it's time to do it now. Stop talking about it and do it.
Well, you know, it's a lot of things that come from Kyrie interview. It's a lot of things that I could dive into when I look at the Brooklyn Nets. And Jackie, you're right. They can't stop a nosebleed defensively. But when I look at them, Rachel, and I look at this Brooklyn Nets team, is one word that sticks out to me, and that's accountability. Because when you look at all the teams that formed the Big Three or went on to go on and win championships or be contenders, they bought in defensively, and it started with the stars. Even when I was in Boston, Paul and Ray Allen wasn't considered top-notch defenders, but they bought in defensively because they knew the ultimate goal was to win a championship. So I get it. They may not have the personnel defensively, but it has to come from those guys holding each other accountable, along with Steve Nash and his coaching staff holding them accountable. And look, I'm not in the film session. I'm not in the locker room. But my eye test tells me from playing with superstars and being on championship contender teams and winning a championship that it's a lack of accountability there. And when you watch teams like the Lakers, the Bucks, the Utah Jazz of the world that are at the top of the charts, that are hanging their hats on the defensive end, you can see the separation. You see guys like LeBron James, Donovan Mitchell, buying in defensively and being the head of the snake on the defensive side of things. So that means to tell me that they're getting held accountable. And I'm watching this Brooklyn Nets team, and they lack accountability.
Well, Perk, though, all those teams you just named are groups that have largely been together for a while. And you know as well as anyone how much continuity helps in this league, especially in this season where everything is kind of thrown up into the air. You heard Kyrie mention all of the ins and outs and stuff that they've had to deal with. They are, of course, not the only team in the league that's had to deal with COVID absences. We just talked about the Heat at length, but it is something that is a factor in what is going on. I'm very curious to see if they bring in more help because the trade deadline is March 25th. There's certainly an opportunity for them to bolster that roster defensively. And you have to think there's going to be some players around the league who might be interested in joining this team as well. So we will find out how that goes. Guys, coming up, we're going to take a little look at Josh Jackson's double punk dunk last night. It got Professor Bobmer in the lab cooking up the jump's greatest double pump jams. It's going to be a lot of fun. Welcome back to The Jump. Now, yesterday, Mark Cuban confirmed that his team had stopped playing the national anthem before games. Cuban said he made the decision not to play the national anthem after consulting with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. But now today, NBA Chief Communications Officer Mike Bass issued this statement saying, quote, "With NBA teams now in the process of welcoming fans back to their arenas, all teams will play the national anthem in keeping with longstanding league policy." So an interesting situation has developed here, and I'm thrilled to now welcome in Mavericks team owner Mark Cuban. We'll have team CEO Sint Marshall joining us in a minute as well. But Mark, take me through a little bit how you guys came to this decision and then what the conversations were in the past 24 hours that led to this morning the release issued by the league overturning that.
Well, let me take you because there's a lot of misinformation out there. First, we're always talking to our community. I mean, that's something Sint stands for and is very insistent upon and has become a core part of who we are at the Dallas Mavericks. And in listening to the community, there were quite a few people that voiced their concerns or really their fears that the national anthem and did not fully represent them, that their voices were not being heard. And so we've had a lot of conversations about whether or not we should play the anthem. And so during the first preseason game, we decided to not play it and just see what the response was. knowing that we were going to have ongoing conversations about it. We didn't make any decision to never play the national anthem. That wasn't the case at all. We didn't cancel the national anthem. We still had our flag flying proud and up on the wall at the American Airlines Center, and everybody had the opportunity to address it and you know, pray to it or salute to it or however, whatever their feelings are. And we, you know, as the games went by, you know, honestly, we kept on talking about what we were going to do at some point, but obviously it came to the head when it was reported that at one of our games that we hadn't played it. But, you know, the bottom line is we had always discussed the fact that we probably would end up playing it at some point, probably when fans came back, but there was never any final decision that had made that we would not play the anthem.
And then what were the conversations you had over the past 24 hours since it came into the news that you guys had not been playing it, since someone noticed, frankly, and started asking about it? What was the back and forth between you and the league office?
None, really. I mean, I talked some to Adam and got his feedback and gave him my feedback that, you know, we had people who were upset by it and were passionate in them being upset. And we had people that fully supported it. That, you know, a lot of people said that they don't understand why, you know, the anthem is played prior to a game. Others said, you know, it shouldn't be played prior to the game. Others said it didn't represent them and they're concerned about being played and it made them uncomfortable. And we talked about all the different feedback that we had received.
And how did they come to the decision then that everybody would play the anthem, including the Mavericks? Did you have that conversation first before the press release went out, or did you learn from?
Basically, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we had never decided that we weren't going to play the anthem when we had fans in. Mm-hmm. You know, we had some fans in last game, but they were all healthcare workers and people we were honoring. They weren't our ticket holders or season ticket holders at all. So, you know, we didn't know, you know, that it would be brought to a head at this point, but it was an ongoing discussion in terms of when we would have our paying fans or season ticket holders back in the arena that we would address it then.
So was this press release your first sort of information that, okay, this is going to be the policy now going forward league-wide?
You mean from the league? Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. You know, but I knew the press release was coming and we were in full agreement with it. Look, we have no problem playing the national anthem at all. I stand for the national anthem. My hand is always over my heart. We've supported the National Flag Foundation and done work with them. You know, that isn't the issue at all. The real issue is how do you express the voices of those who feel the anthem doesn't represent them or causes them consternation?
And how do you do that going forward?
Well, that's why we have SINT. You know, that's the programs that we're setting up with SINT. You know, we listen, learn, we unite. We, you know, we have courageous conversations, and we'll have many more of those, you know, with our current players, with our former players, with key people in the community. We have DMAC, which are our organization of people from the community that we listen to on these issues. You know, we don't do this in a vacuum. We make these decisions after having talked to and listening and making sure that, you know, our goal is to have all voices heard, not just the loudest voices.
We were hoping to have SINT on with us right now, having some technical difficulties, so we might be able to get her back later in the show. So I will just ask you for now, though, Mark, you may now face potential backlash kind of in both directions. You were talking about the feedback you got from people saying the anthem doesn't represent them. But of course, there are a lot of people who feel very strongly that the anthem should be played before games. Mm-hmm. What kind of backlash might you expect from that side?
I mean, you know, when you try to do things that are hard, it's never going to be easy, right? When you try to, you know, create social change, it's never going to be easy. We saw that all summer long. You know, we listened to people and, you know, there were a lot of people who tried to stand up for what they believed in and weren't really heard. You know, these are difficult conversations that are not going to go away, whether or not we play the national anthem. You know, we're just, you know, as Tennis said to me, we're just glad that we're having this conversation out of choice, not because of some tragedy that ignited the conversation. So now is the time to have it.
I know that you said that you went sort of back and forth in conversations with the league leading up to this. Did you consider maybe bringing this up at a Board of Governors meeting, or would you still do that to have a more of a conversation league-wide on what the NBA should be doing here?
You know, we'll have ongoing conversations. We obviously had a lot of those this summer, and we have a lot of ongoing conversations with our players, the Players Association, because this is an issue that's important to us. This is not something that goes away. You know, there is systemic racism in this country. There are people who are afraid to walk down the street in this country. There are people, when we talk about injustice for all, who don't receive justice for all, you know, and that is a problem. So this is a conversation we have to have now. You know, it's the anthem, you know, may be an initiator to those conversations, then that's great. But that's the far more important thing. And that was the genesis of everything that we've done.
Well, we will look forward to seeing how all of that develops. Mark, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks for having me, Rachel.
All right, The Jump is going to be right back right after these commercials. Welcome back to The Jump. Now, yesterday, owner Mark Cuban confirming his team had stopped playing the national anthem before games. But today, the NBA came back and said, not so fast, releasing a statement saying all arenas will be playing the national anthem, especially with fans coming back in the building. We just had Mark on the show here. Perk, what is your reaction to hearing Mark explain how this all came about and how they're going to go forward now?
Well, I actually love it because Mark Cuban is playing chess, not checkers. And I thought this was a great chess move by him because he's fighting for what's right and it's genuine. You could tell it's coming from a genuine place. And what he did is he's ruffling the feathers and making people uncomfortable and making people make sure we stay focused on what's at hand. And that's civil rights and social justice and equal rights for all, and so it won't disappear. And I applaud him for it. I actually do.
Yeah, I agree, Perk. And I think when you look at the evolution of social justice in this league, you can start with Mark Cuban, who I think 3 or 4 years ago was saying that he stands for the national anthem and wanted and expected his players to do that. Clearly, with conversations through the years with his players, he's altered his thinking. So why can't the rest of us try to do that as well?
And I think, and I feel bad that Cynthia Marshall was having trouble dialing in with our segment there, because she's such a great advocate, as Mark was saying, for the community. She's one of the highest ranking African Americans in a front office in the league. And I think the conversations that she had been having are impactful. And the fact that the team was listening to people both inside the organization and outside matters. And I was curious when, Jackie, you heard me ask Mark, is this something he's going to bring up at the Board of Governors, do you think this will be an evolving conversation, Jackie, within the league? Because Adam Silver, on the other hand, has been pretty consistent, even in his pregame availability with the media this year. He made the point that he hopes that not only teams continue to play the national anthem, but he hopes the players are standing for the national anthem because he would like it to once again, as he said, represent the melting pot that this country can be and what the best of America could be if we all keep working on it. What do you think the future is here for how the league wants to handle this?
Well, I understand Adam saying that, but clearly the feedback that Mark Cuban and the Dallas Mavericks are getting is something completely different. Doesn't it might make sense to have that dialogue continue on a larger level in the Board of Governors meeting with the Players Association and also team by team? And then you'll really find out if what Adam Silver hopes it means is truly what his players feel. And it might be two different things there.
Absolutely. All right. Well, go ahead, Perk.
No, I was just saying, Mark Cuban is doing a great job as an owner, as holding other owners accountable and holding their feet to the fire. So he's standing on the front line and saying, you know what, we're going to support our players. We're going to support any issues that they have dealing with in the world today. And I'm going to stand on the front line. And if he has to ruffle the feathers, he's going to do it.
All right, well, let's move on to the Mavs on the court. Expectations for this team, they've won their last two games. They're 11-14 overall this season, Jackie. What are your expectations for Dallas? Have they lowered from what they were preseason?
Well, I'd be lying if I said no, because we are a little further in. I didn't expect them, for instance, Rachel, to be last in three-point shooting. They're the worst three-pointing percentage team in the league. Luka's only shooting around 30%. The struggles of Porzingis early on in the season, I think, have caused people to second guess. That doesn't mean he can't round into form. They miss Seth Curry. Seth Curry's shooting 49% for the Sixers across in the Eastern Conference.
Yep.
So can they round into form? Sure, but are they the team that can contend? They're just not the team I thought they were going to be.
They're not, and that's a great point. They are missing Seth Curry, and I said when they traded him this summer that I felt like Philly won in this trade. But when you look at the Dallas Mavericks, They have to realize we anointed, including myself. I'm guilty of this. We anointed Luka at an early age, and he was the MVP front runner coming into this season. And so then you have to realize that you're now going to be the hunted, and teams are going to be coming after you night in and night out as a whole, not just Luka, but the Dallas Mavericks in general. And also, I think some of their struggles is losing Coach Silas to the Houston Rockets, although I love that he got his head coaching opportunity, but losing him was a huge blow.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, Perk. Remember, this was a historic offense in Dallas last season. Coach Silas, definitely a part of that, one of the architects of that, and it is what partly got him this job in Houston that he completely deserved, such a longtime assistant, but it's going to have an effect as well. As for the trade, Seth Curry, they obviously felt that getting Josh Richardson in that deal was an important part about bolstering their defense, which they definitely needed last season. I am interested to see if they can get the balance working out. I was just in Dallas over the weekend, and it is a work in progress. There is no doubt about that. I want to get to the other side of the matchup, though, because Jack, you've been working on a piece on Trae Young, just his confidence being on full display on the court. Do you think that swagger is going to translate into more wins? How did you go in depth there?
I really do think it is, Rachel, because and everybody I spoke to for this story, and I spoke to quite a few people all the way through, from kids that he grew up with, people through college that were with him, and they all said the same thing. It's all about winning with Trae Young. He just wants to win, and I think what he realizes now, he's always had that chip on his shoulder. I know you've talked to him about it before. This idea that he's too small, that he can't do it, that he's got to prove it to everybody. Well, he has now. He's an all-star. He's among the leaders in league leaders in points and assists. So everybody knows, yes, you belong. So the next step for him now is bring your team to the playoffs. So how do you do that? Well, first of all, you got to play defense with the same passion that you attack the rim and attack the offensive end of the floor. But the other thing too is when you draw a crowd, and he always will because of how he shoots, you dish it off. Let someone else maybe take one of those game-winning shots. And I think you're seeing it. Rondo's been a great mentor from him. Great, great mentor. And they're talking a lot about pick and roll with Clint Capella, pick and roll with John Collins, getting other guys involved. And Rondo is really excited about the possibilities for Trae Young going forward.
Look, when you think of Trae, when I think of Trae Young, I think of Steph Curry. Steph Curry had the swag coming in. He had the shimmy, shoulder shake, or whatever you want to call it. Why can't Trae Young? Trae Young has been doubted all his life because of his size. And look, there's only a few guys in the league that get trapped in the first half of a game soon as he cross half court. And Trae Young is one of them. He is a generational talent.
Right.
He's a level 4 scorer in today's game. And I do think his swagger is everything, not only for himself and his game, but it also gives swagger to the team and the organization.
It is fun to watch.
Yeah, there's no question. He doesn't get here without it.
Yes.
Doesn't get here without that swagger. Doesn't get to the NBA without it. No question.
I totally agree. It is part of his game, and I do think it's infectious. You can just see it around the team. All right, guys, we're going to talk Celtics coming up. You knew that we were. Look who's on the panel today. Coming up, Kemba Walker has played 10 games. Hasn't quite looked like the player who made each of the previous 4 All-Star games. So we will ask Perk and Jackie Mack if they are concerned. That is next right here on The Jump. And here on The Jump, it's crunch time, friends. Kemba Walker has been back in the Celtics lineup 10 games now. Remember, he missed 13 while rehabbing his left knee. His numbers down across the board from his career averages. So, Perk, is this something that will just improve with time, or is there a legit concern here?
No, it's big concerns here because Kemba just don't look himself. And I'm not saying health-wise, Rachel. He's just having a hard time of getting the ball into the basket or finding his role. With the emergence of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, Kemba is now the third option. And guess what? The city of Boston, they don't want to hear any excuses. Kemba is going to have to deliver. Excuse me.
Well, you're right about one thing, Perk. As great as Tatum and Brown have been, if they really want to go to the finals, a championship, they need the Kemba that they signed as a free agent a couple years back. I've been watching him really closely. When he had the 1-for-12 for the Lakers, I thought, that's just one game, but it's been 4 or 5 games now, and I can't tell if it's, you know, he has to create separation by stopping short on that knee, putting a lot of pressure on it. Is it a mental thing that he's not 100% sure, or is it more a physical thing? I don't think it's physical because they're increasing his minutes, which they wouldn't do
right.
if his knee was hurting. So definitely bears watching. I think if it's a mental thing, you hope he gets there. He's one of the nicest guys in the NBA. You can't help but root for Kemba Walker. That's for sure.
Absolutely. I talked to him last week. He said it is a little bit of a rhythm thing still, which I guess is both mental, right, and physical a little bit to some degree. Sure. And of course, you know, Jaylen Brown emerged. He's always been so good, right? But the explosion that he's had this season happened when Kemba was out. So he did say it was a little bit of an adjustment for that too. We will see. Let's move over to G League Ignite because that team made its season debut today. Top prospects Jonathan Kuminga and Jalen Green combining for 30 points in a win over the Santa Cruz Warriors. Mm-hmm. This was fun, Jackie. They won by 5 points. Did you expect that? These are the top prospects team playing against the grown-ups, as we say.
Right. Yeah, and I love the fact that the prospects can get it done. I learned all about Jalen Green from our pal Ramona Shelburne and the story she did. I didn't know that much about him, so it gave me some stats and stuff to put to the face. He looks like a keeper to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Rachel, Jackie, both of these kids are young studs and very, very talented, and they don't care about who they're facing. That's the most impressive thing that I got from the game last night, that whoever it was, grown men or not, they were ready for the moment.
Well, I know that the G League Ignite games are going to be on the ESPN family of networks all season. I'm pretty psyched for this. There's some fun stuff going on in the mini bubble down in Orlando. Let's talk about the Bucks and Suns because they are the nightcap of tonight's ESPN doubleheader. Phoenix looking for their fourth straight win. Perk, do you expect the Bucks to cool off the scorching hot Suns here? Because Phoenix looks good.
Rachel, I was high on Phoenix once they traded for Chris Paul, and guess what? I'm still high on them. The Bucks are not going into Phoenix tonight and getting no type of win. The Phoenix are committed on the defensive end. I love the way that their role players, Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges is playing, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton are playing like the young stars that we've been waiting to see.
Well, I think the big problem for the Bucks is Jrue Holiday is now out, we think, because of COVID protocols. And, you know, he would become helpful when you're trying to slow down Devin Booker, I would think.
Yeah.
But I will say this about the Bucks: they seem to be rounding into form. Giannis in particular. We haven't seen the best of Giannis yet. That trajectory is going to keep rising. I find it hard to ever bet against Giannis.
And look, the Bucks have been very open about the fact that they are using this regular season to experiment more. They have heard all of the criticism. Their last two postseason runs not only fell short, but fell short in a way where the team just seemed too rigid, inflexible, wasn't able to switch on the fly. So they are using this regular season to change who they can be in the postseason, and that is sometimes messy. So, Jackie, yes, I do expect them to get better as the season goes on, and they're already doing pretty well. They're near the top of the Eastern Conference, but it's going to be interesting. And, of course, DeAndre Ayton, as we've been hearing, he's been improving his defense. It'll be a test for him tonight as well. All right, time for our League Pass game of the night. We've got a lot of great options to choose from. 9 games on the NBA slate this evening, but only one features the League Pass MVPs from the past 2 seasons. Oh, yes, our League Pass winner for this season so far has been LaMelo Ball and the Hornets. They're facing off against our League Pass star from last year, Ja Morant and the Grizzlies, 8 Eastern. Jackie, which player would you rather have for the next 5 years, LaMelo or reigning Rookie of the Year, Ja?
So I 100% tried to bail on this question because I both think they're really, really exciting. And LaMelo Ball has blown me away with what he's been able to do right out of the chute for a team that really needed him to do that. So I'm picking Ja Morant, but only because we have a larger sample size of his specialness. Mm. I think they're both going to be really good.
I agree with you, Jackie. And since you took Ja, I'm going to take LaMelo just to give both of them their flowers. But if you want a kid that's going to come in and put up big numbers and sell out arenas and sell shoes and jerseys, I'm taking LaMelo Ball. The kid is flat out box office, period.
I agree with you both. It's a hard choice because they're both so good. Ja Morant's leadership, I think, is something that I would point to right now. LaMelo isn't being asked to do that yet, so it's not a criticism. He's not being put in that position. But we've seen Ja in that position, both on and off the court. And you've seen how those other young players on the Grizzlies have rallied around them. And really, his DNA has spread to all of them. So even when he was out, they had the same fight that we know that he has every night. I've been so impressed with that. So impressed with both of them. Thank you both so much for the time today. Thanks to Mark Cuban as well.